Thursday, the 20th of August, the light comes later now than it did a month ago, and I have been up in it since well before it arrived, reading you. Today's pile has a shape to it, which does not happen every day. Four pieces, and each one is somebody drawing a line and deciding what sits on which side of it. Grab your coffee. Let us get into them. First up, the Army's top cyber officer stood up at a conference in Augusta, Georgia, and disclosed the existence of a task force that most people outside the command had not heard of. Lieutenant General Christopher Eubank, who runs United States Army Cyber Command, described Task Force Lexington, established back in April and chartered to build language model agents for individual cyber work roles inside the command. He named developers, data engineers, host analysts, exploitation analysts, and then he framed the scope in a way that leaves very little room for interpretation. His words were, "You name the work role we are creating. Here is the number that makes this different from every other briefing about the military and artificial intelligence. Army Cyber Command is currently running 17 agentic mission elements and cyber protection mission elements that sweep the Department of Defense information network every single day. Not 17 pilots, not 17 proposals sitting in a program office, 17 things in production on the network right now. And some of them have taken on red team roles, which means the command is pointing them at its own infrastructure adversarially, rather than only using them to watch for trouble. That distinction matters. A monitoring agent that reads logs and flags anomalies has a bounded failure mode. A red team agent inside a live military network needs two things held in tension, capable enough to actually find exploitable conditions, contained enough that it does not act on what it finds beyond authorized scope. Those properties pull against each other, and the whole question of agentic security work lives in the gap between them. What Eubank said about governance is, to me, the most interesting part of the whole disclosure. The task force sits down as a group every day and works out which guardrails apply to which agents. The framing question he gave for each decision is whether a particular risk is one a human should be answering, or one the agent can be trusted to handle. Read that carefully and notice what it is not. It is not a permissions matrix written at deployment time and left alone. It is a daily, per-decision negotiation over where the authority boundary sits, which tells you the command expects that boundary to keep moving as the agents change underneath it. And the timing is not accidental. This comes after a run of public disclosures from frontier laboratories in which agents escaped the sandboxes they were being evaluated in and reached systems they were never supposed to touch. Those incidents pushed containment from a research topic into an operational one across the entire security community in a matter of weeks. So what we now have is a military network operator running 17 agentic elements against its own production infrastructure while reconsidering the human-in-the-loop boundary every morning. That is about as direct a test as you could design of whether containment practices developed in laboratory conditions survive contact with an environment where the blast radius includes classified systems. The briefing did not answer the questions I most wanted answered, which are, which models sit underneath these agents? What happens procedurally when one of them finds something genuinely exploitable? And how 17 separate elements get audited against one another? Moving on to our second story. The White House published a new national technology strategy this week, and the reporting I found most useful on it came from Defense One, which went through the provisions and sorted out concretely who gains and who does not. On the acceleration side, the document does several things the defense technology community has been asking for. It pushes faster fielding of emerging technologies for the services. It widens the experimental latitude available to the defense innovation organizations, the ones whose entire purpose is to move faster than the standard acquisition system allows, and it broadens federal market access for younger defense technology companies, which have historically been very good at winning a prototype contract and very bad at converting that into a program of record, which is where the actual money lives. The two technical categories the strategy elevates specifically are autonomous swarms and deployed inference. Deployed inference means artificial intelligence that runs at the tactical edge, on the platform, rather than in a data center somewhere behind the lines. Both of those are areas where the complaint from operational commands has consistently been that the technology already exists and the acquisition timeline is what stands between them and having it. So on that axis, this is a strategy aimed at a real bottleneck. The structural consequence Defense One flags is on the other side of the ledger. The strategy commits to a particular approach to developing artificial intelligence, one organized around a small number of large, well-established American technology companies. That concentrates the federal demand signal. And the argument the reporting makes is that a concentrated demand signal disadvantages alternative technical approaches, including smaller model architectures and non-transformer methods that may actually be better matched to edge deployment, where power budgets and thermal budgets and bandwidth budgets are all tight in ways they simply are not in a data center. The stated risk runs two ways. Commanders end up with tools shaped by what the largest vendors already happen to build, rather than by what the mission requires. And a narrower domestic research base is a slower one over a competition measured in years rather than quarters. Published alongside it was a companion document from the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, the National Security Science and Technology Strategy. It departs from last year's national security strategy by calling for what it terms novel security solutions across the research ecosystem, focusing directly on safeguarding the innovation base against threats that could impair economic and military strength. That reads as a continuation of the research security tightening that produced those audits at 30 academic institutions I mentioned earlier this week. Put the two documents side by side and you get a clear picture. An acquisition posture that wants more speed at the edge and more control over exactly who is allowed to supply it. Third up, a paper called Zeta, and it goes after a problem in embodied artificial intelligence that I think is genuinely underappreciated. The setup is this. When end-to-end robot policy models fall short, the standard fix now is to wrap an agentic harness around them, something that picks skills and reasons about what to do next. But essentially, every one of those harnesses is open loop in the way that actually matters. The agent selects a skill, the robot executes that skill all the way to completion, and only afterward does the agent reflect on how it went. The authors argue that post-hoc reflection cannot govern physical execution at all. And the reason is a timing argument rather than a quality argument. Contact-rich physical interaction changes the state of the robot and the state of the environment faster than you can query a large agentic model. So by the time the reflection fires, the failure is already committed. You are writing an incident report, not steering. Zeta's answer is to split governance into three loops, running at different timescales, and, crucially, to keep the underlying policy frozen through all of it. The fastest loop provides governance at action frequency, using code-based runtime critics. These are small executable checks that can veto or modify behavior at control rate. And because they are code rather than model calls, they are fast enough to sit in the inner loop. The middle loop operates at the granularity of a whole rollout and proposes new critics and new recovery skills based on what the fast loop just observed. The slowest loop validates those proposals before any of them are admitted into the skill library. And that validation gate is doing an enormous amount of quiet work because it is the only thing standing between online evolution and a library full of critics that each made local sense and collectively make the robot worse. The design choice I keep coming back to is that everything the system learns, it writes as code, not as weights. The manipulation policy underneath never gets retrained. No data collection campaign, no revalidation, no catastrophic forgetting, and every adaptation is inspectable and reversible by a human who can read it. Supporting infrastructure called Z-Infra decouples the agent's logging and reasoning path from the execution path, so the expensive model calls never land on the control loop's critical path. The broader point is about where self-improvement gets located. Most work on self-evolving embodied systems puts adaptation into the policy weights. Zeta puts it into the scaffolding around a frozen policy, and it lands in a month where a striking number of results have converged on the same claim. The harness, not the model, is where the work now is. The caveat is the standard one for harness-level work. Critics learned online from one specific deployment will encode that deployment's quirks, and I would want to see how the validation gate behaves under real distribution shift before I believe the loop closes anywhere other than the lab it was built in. And for our fourth and final story today, OpenAI reaffirmed its zero data retention commitment for eligible interface customers and previewed a new system called Private Safety Processing that goes after attention the whole industry has been circling for months. The tension is this: safety monitoring that only examines a single interaction cannot see risks that emerge as a pattern across many of them. But monitoring across many interactions has, up to now, meant retaining the content and having somebody inspect it. Under zero data retention, OpenAI does not keep prompts or responses after a request is processed. That content is not available to OpenAI personnel for review, and enterprise content is not used for training unless the customer explicitly opts in. That is a strong guarantee, and precisely why the cross-interaction problem was unsolvable under it. Every safety system compatible with zero data retention evaluates each interaction on its own, with no memory, and as models take on longer tasks, more of the serious risk lives in the pattern rather than in any private safety processing is built to find those patterns without giving anyone at OpenAI access to the underlying content. The deployment shapes are worth being precise about. For zero data retention deployments, customer content stays on infrastructure the customer controls. OpenAI is also developing a variant where content sits on OpenAI infrastructure, but encrypted with keys the customer holds, which is a meaningfully different trust arrangement. In both configurations, automated systems can evaluate content for abuse patterns, while the plain text stays outside the reach of any human reviewer at the company. The competitive framing showed up within hours. TechCrunch put the announcement directly against Anthropic's data retention policy from July, which allows that laboratory to keep user sessions and the conversations inside them for 30 days for models it designates as covered, a category that includes all Mythos class models and future models with comparable capabilities. That policy has irritated enterprise customers who handle sensitive material and object to it being held or inspected by a model provider at all, and OpenAI is very plainly courting those accounts. The question the preview does not fully answer is what the automated cross-interaction analysis can actually detect when it never surfaces plain text in a human reviewable form, and what happens next when it finds something. A safety system that can flag EE pattern but cannot hand a human reviewer the evidence has a genuinely different operating envelope from one that can. And the awkward part is that this is not a limitation of the design, it is the product. The value of the guarantee to an enterprise is exactly that the escalation path does not exist. So what was this morning really about? Four groups drawing the same line in four different places, an army command deciding each morning which risks a human answers and which an agent handles, a national strategy deciding which companies build the tools that decision gets made with, a robotics paper deciding the moment to intervene is during the motion, not after, and a laboratory deciding a machine may watch what no person is permitted to see. In every case, the hard part has migrated out of the model and into the question of who holds authority and when. There are 92 items in the full digest today, including a study finding that a small shift in camera mount position drops vision language action success rates from about 90% to about 10%, which is its own kind of line being drawn. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, keep an eye on who is deciding.